Making it work. Thank you. I am Samantha, and I am so excited. The women in the room will appreciate I have open-toed shoes on, and I came from Boston. You have no idea how glad I am to be here. I am glad to be here not just because I get to wear open-toed shoes in February, but because we have actually a really important thing to talk about. And I do a lot of work with companies that are using artificial intelligence in all different kinds of ways. And in fact, all of us are using it every day. Many of us don't realize it. It's sometimes hidden in the things that we do, but we are using it every day, both in our jobs and in our lives. So I'm really excited to be talking to you guys about this today. And it is actually sort of a serious topic that we have to broach together today, because we as B2B marketers are actually in the middle of a trust crisis. And I don't generally like to be dramatic, but I actually believe this wholeheartedly, and it's actually not an overly dramatic statement. The reality is more than half of Americans don't trust businesses. And if you look at the same data in other countries and other parts of the world, it's similarly staggering and startling and scary. And it makes our job a lot harder. And what's worse is not only that that number isn't where we would like it to be, but much more importantly, it's taken a huge nosedive in the past year. It declined 10% in 2018. We have not seen that kind of a decline in decades, if ever. This data is from Edelman Barometer. If you don't know that study and you'd like to get a copy of it, I'm happy to send you a link to it. But they've been doing this study for a really long time, and this is actually alarming. And the reason it's alarming is that our jobs are getting harder and harder. There's more regulations being written to protect people's privacy. People don't want to give us their information. The ads that we run are costing us more money but being less effective. Our emails aren't being opened. Sales wants more. The business isn't growing fast enough. Or maybe we're growing really, really fast, but we know we can see the wall we're about to hit really soon. We have to ask ourselves, because we're talking about this as if it's the nirvana, can artificial intelligence actually save us? Or is it going to take a real crisis in trust and catapult us off the end? I believe completely, sincerely, and wholeheartedly, based on the last 2 years of research that I've been doing, as well as using it in practical applications, that the choice is everybody's in this room. It's mine, it's yours, it's every marketer's. We are actually going to be the people who help decide whether artificial intelligence helps us or it hurts us. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Artificial intelligence does incredible things, right? It can help us in incredible ways, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But it was a lot easier to understand when it was obvious we were talking to a machine, right? Those, you probably are familiar with, I don't know if you know Hitchbot. Do you guys know who Hitchbot is? That cute little thing with the little smiley face. That poor little machine hitchhiked across Canada, and everywhere it went, it said, can I get a ride? And you could ask it questions, and people would pick it up. The thing made it to the U.S. and was vandalized on, like, day 12. Poor Hitchbot. America's not good for him. Right? We've all seen and heard all these things that are almost science fiction based, but at least we could tell that those are machines. It's not the case anymore. I want you to listen to something, and hopefully you're going to hear it well, and if not, I'm going to explain after what you're listening to. Can you, it's not playing it for me, Treasure. Treasure's going to help us out. Thank you. He really is. I swear there's sound. Thanks for bearing with us, folks. If we can't get it to work in a second, couple seconds, I'll just explain what it is we're looking at. We even practiced in the back. Probably don't believe me, but we did. This is the worst lead up to something that you're invariably going to find disappointing after we've been waiting like this.
Here we go. Hi, I'm calling for the Woman Haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd. Sure, give me 1 second.
Thank you, Treasure. So do you guys know what you heard? So you heard a human and a machine making an appointment to get their hair done. How many of you thought that the salon was a machine? A couple of people. It's okay, you can raise your hands. And the rest of you thought the person was, right? It's hard to tell, right? Even if you knew it was actually the person who was calling the salon, that was the person. And some of you might have heard this. This was a Google virtual assistant, which is why you heard some giggling in the back. It was a recording from an event that they hosted. But it was incredibly difficult to know who was the human and who was the machine. And it was incredibly difficult to know because the machine did things like, very human-like things. It said, uh-huh. Right? It used phrases and mimicked human language patterns and behaviors. It also did something that was really remarkable, and we may not realize it, but it gave answers to questions it didn't know it was going to be asked. It wasn't responding to a script. Oh, I can't make that time. Oh, let me suggest an alternative. What kind of treatment do you want? Oh, I just want a haircut. Right? It had politeness to it. It's going to be harder and harder to tell when we're talking to a machine and we're talking to a human. Have you guys seen this deep fake video mashup? Anybody here seen this before? This is hysterical, actually. I will say, don't search for adult deep fake video if you'd like to see this. I did a search and it was coming up with some cartoon things, so I made the mistake of typing that in. Please don't do it. It's things no human should see. So, at least not in the privacy of, you know, your office. It was bad. But this was actually quite remarkable. Was that this is Jennifer Lawrence, who's adorable, right, is accepting an award, and she has her speech. And somebody thought it'd be really funny to put Steve Buscemi's face on her face and have it. And what is unbelievable about it is when you play this video, and Treasure, can you just play that the bigger video for us?
To win, so I
right
need to win, so I
thank you. I picked a very short clip because I didn't want to waste her time on. But when you watch the whole thing, it is really hard to tell. I actually couldn't tell at all that isn't the natural person talking. It is unbelievable facial recognition and matching technology that allows this to happen. It's, how do we know? Now, I'll be honest, when I first saw the fake, I thought it was showing me a shadow here, and I thought that was the giveaway. But then I went and looked at the original, and atop you'll see the original. There's actually a shadow there in the original that was not caused by the facial recognition technology. It is almost impossible to tell, except that we all know who Jennifer Lawrence looks like, so this wasn't her. But in a world where we can do this, should we do this? Artificial intelligence has the opportunity to scale authentic, personalized interactions in a way that our rules-based automation systems never could. It can allow us to know who to target, who's most likely to need our product or service at any given time. It can allow someone who visits our websites to have an experience that has been catered specifically to them. It can help a salesperson know the best time of day to call an individual specific buyer. It's incredible what it can do. But it can also do those things that I just showed you. And it's going to require discipline from us as marketers to not do what we did with marketing automation. There's nothing inherently flawed with marketing automation technology. Yet we as a business let it spam people. We let it ignore people when they actually should be engaging with us. We didn't use it well. And I challenge all of us to realize that we will decide whether this technology propels relationships, builds personal interactions at scale, or further permanently destroys whatever trust we can get back between our customers and our companies. I'm going to step you through today the things that I think are guidelines for us to have these truly authentic human conversations. And they all roll up to one incredibly foundational, important point. Artificial intelligence is not a substitute for humans. And if we treat it like a substitute for humans, we are shortchanging our customers, our brands, and our companies. I want to tell you the tale. This is the Philadelphia Marriott West. right outside of Philadelphia near Conshohocken, Pennsylvania. There was nothing special about this hotel. It is a perfectly nice Marriott that has clean rooms, friendly enough staff, it's functional, the bed's comfortable, exactly what you expect. The only reason I've stayed there multiple times is because I have a client who has a corporate rate there and they have a shuttle that goes to their office. I've been to Philadelphia many times, not for this client, and I've never once thought to stay at this hotel. I have never written a review about this hotel. I have never encouraged anyone to stay at this hotel or even mentioned that I was going there. Perfectly acceptable, mediocre, nothing special about it experience. Until one time. That one time, I met Luigi. So I was traveling with my client. Her headquarters is in Conshohocken, but she actually lives in Boston near me. So we were traveling together to run a workshop together. The flight was late, it was bumpy, we were hungry, we were tired, we knew we had to get up. Both of us just wanted to check into this hotel. We were like so done for the day. We're grumpy, we're friends enough that we're showing that we're grumpy to each other, even though she's a client of mine. My stomach's rumbling, ugh. Right? It was awful. We get to the hotel and she asks the front desk clerk, is Luigi working tonight? And she gets this big smile. She's a happily married woman. I didn't think too much of it at first. I'm like, who's Luigi? Not saying too much. The clerk says, yes. And now she's beaming. I'm thinking, okay, if she's having an affair, she probably wouldn't be having that reaction in front of me. But this Luigi guy, who is he? Not saying anything. She goes, we had plans to eat in the restaurant, grab something. And she goes, instead of the restaurant, could we go to the concierge lounge? And she's like a little schoolgirl. Now, this is like one of the most professional, polished women I've ever had the pleasure of working with. And she's turned into like a teenager who's giddy and like, ooh, I'm going to see Luigi. I'm really confused, but I'm also so hungry and tired, I don't care. And I'm like, sure, that's fine. Whatever you want, honey. I just need food, love. Just take me to food, please. So we put our bags in our separate rooms, we meet up and we go to the concierge lounge. And she's like, oh, I hope he remembers me as she knocks on the door. Literally, these words are coming out of her mouth. I'm amused now and I cannot wait to see who Luigi is, I'm dying. The door opens and it's Luigi. I'm not going to say her name because then you might be able to figure out who it is. And I don't want to embarrass her. She'd be embarrassed by the story. So I'm going to call her Beth. Her name is not Beth. Beth! Oh, that's wonderful. He gives Beth a big hug. He's an okay looking guy. You know, I'm not wondering why she's dreaming of Luigi at this point. And he turns to me and goes, gorgeous, who are you? Now I kind of get it. Like, he just called me gorgeous. I kind of like this guy. I'm off a plane, my hair's sticking up, my stomach's rumbling, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I'm grumpy. He put a smile on my face. So we go through the whole course of the hour and a half that we were there, and Luigi's asking her about colleagues by name. She'd actually only seen Luigi two other times. He knew all the people who worked there. This is a corporate account. And he has this relationship with her. And throughout the whole night, I'm telling him about my kids' college. I mean, like, all of a sudden, he's my best friend. And he's still this stuff. And there's something about Luigi. He has a gift. This is a very special human being. Something that we can't replicate in any other way. And you know what was magical about Luigi? He kept leaving us to go do the same thing for other people. But I never felt slighted. I always felt like he was there for us. It was truly an incredible experience. I wrote a review about the hotel for the first time. So this is Luigi, our kind Italian gentleman, whose wife, by the way, actually also works at the hotel. I know about his kids, his wife. Like, I got to know him on a level that seems impossible and also in 45 minutes, right? It was crazy. I'm not the only other person who wrote reviews about Luigi. If you look at the hotel reviews, they're almost all about Luigi. He is the person who inspires people to love this hotel and this experience. And I look for ways to come back and stay on the... For the first time ever, when I went for a visit, I booked the concierge floor. I spent $50 extra because Luigi's so awesome. That's ridiculous. Just ludicrous. But it's true. And I'm not alone in that. Now, I'd like you to meet Relay. Relay is actually kind of cool. Relay is this incredible technology. Relay is a robot that roams the halls of a hotel, not the Conshohocken Marriott. but other hotels. And when you meet Relay, I don't know if you can see what's on the screen, it says, do you need anything? And you can talk to Relay, and Relay will get it for you. And Relay is an incredible, incredible feat of technology. Relay can roam halls, go around obstacles, right? Meet people, go around. We all throw our trays on the floor when we're done with our food. Relay can go around that. All for humans seem like no big deal, but for a machine, it's actually incredible that it can not have a pre-programmed map and do this. Relay can even call the elevator and ride the elevator. Relay can, when it's outside your room, Relay rings your phone and says, I'm here, let me in. Kind of weird, but kind of cool. And you know what? When my hair dryer is broken at the hotel, you only find out when you're late for a meeting. That's when it always breaks, right? I actually, in my towel, don't want to answer the door for a human being. I'm really glad that Relay is going to be the person to deliver that to me. Not looking my best, right? Relay serves incredible value and is also kind of fun and cool artificial intelligence technology. But does Relay replace Luigi? I don't think so. Judging by a lot of your shaking heads, you don't think so either. We also know from research, this is a study that was done through Carnegie Mellon, that our human-to-machine interactions, we get frustrated faster. We get angry faster. And up to 50% of our aggravation, we're vulgar, we're loud, we yell, we curse, because we're talking to a machine and not a human. As brands, as companies, do we want to interact with people and get them frustrated faster and angry faster? We're good at that on our own, aren't we? We don't need help making people mad at us, right? So I want to be really clear. I believe that there is an important place for humans and machine interactions. The technology is here. It has incredible opportunity for us. How we choose to use it is up to all of us. And whether we experience great growth and trust, but we degrade it, is up to how we do it. And there are five things that I think we need to take into account. The first is, don't stop qualitative analysis. Data tells us what is happening. It can tell us what somebody did on our website. It can tell us where they visited. It can tell us what content they downloaded. It may even be able to predict their next move. Right? We think they're likely ready to buy, likely ready to talk to a salesperson now. It's pretty amazing. But it doesn't tell us why. And as marketers, the why matters tremendously to creating a connection with our customer. Give you a very simple example of this. We may ask people, are you the person responsible for purchasing accounting software? Let's say we ask two people. Those two people both say yes. That's our data. Good, we know something valuable. But listen to how we ask those people. First one says, yes, I purchase all of our accounting software. The second person says, oh, yes, I purchase all of our accounting software. So I'm a terrible actor, actress, but hopefully you get the difference. Right? We can hear things and differences in tones of voice and interacting with humans that data cannot pick up. Data can pick up some pretty incredible things. It can pick up pauses in conversations. It can do awesome things, but it doesn't get rid of the need to understand the why. Oops. The second thing is something you have heard for 10 years at least. You certainly heard it here. We need to serve, not sell. This is incredibly important when we use technology in new ways. This will determine how much it adds value to our companies and our relationship with our buyers, and how much it pushes people away. I'm going to give you an example. Now, these are two consumer ads, actually, and I pulled them out for a reason. I'm showing them to you today because there's nothing preventing us as B2B marketers from doing interactive advertising, except we don't do it. There's no reason not to. I'm particularly fond of the Swanson's Campbell's Soup example that you see there. What happens there, you may not be obvious looking at a screenshot of it, is you go there and you enter ingredients and it gives me a recipe. So I don't know about you guys, but 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, somebody invariably knocks on my office door and tells me, what's for dinner? And I look at them and say, I don't know, what are you making? And they look at me and say, I wasn't gonna cook, aren't you cooking? We do this like every night. Eventually you'd think they'd catch on that mom isn't cooking dinner every night. But I open my refrigerator, because I'm not a planner when it comes to food. I'm really bad about that. So I open my refrigerator, I'm like, I don't know, I got basil chicken and rice. What the heck am I gonna make? Well, if I've got this ad, I can put that in there. And it's gonna give me a recipe. But here's what's really amazing about this interactive ad. It is not actually going and doing a keyword search and finding all the recipes that have chicken, basil, and rice in them. It's doing something much more important. It actually knows where I'm from. And it's looking at things like geographic preferences and styles of either, whether it's Southern, or maybe I'm from California, or I'm from the North. It also looks at things like weather. So if it's a really cold day out like it is in Boston right now, it's gonna make me a recipe maybe for a hearty soup. If I'm 95 degrees out and an unusually hot day in the spring, it might make a chicken salad so I don't have to turn my stove on. That's brilliant. That's serving. And then, by the way, with the recipe comes a coupon. They're still selling, but they're doing it by serving me as their primary focus and motivation. The reality is most companies are not buying. 99.9999% of the time that you want to interact with a customer or a buyer or a prospect at any given point in time, they are not buying. They are not in a buy cycle. They're returning something, they're using it. If we're lucky, they're advocating. Maybe they're asking for help. But we spend almost all of our energy in the buy cycle phase of our interactions with customers. Artificial intelligence allows us to break that cycle and do some incredible things. I'm gonna give you an example of this. So insurance companies are the worst, right? When do you interact with an insurance company? When I'm buying their policy, which is largely a commodity market, I'm looking for best price, right, in coverage. And when something horrible happens, you don't call the insurance company because you're having a good day, right? Got in a car accident, someone you love dies, you've had a flood. That's hard for insurance companies. One of the reasons it's a commodity price market is because they don't have relationships with their customers. It's just as easy for me to move from one to the other. Insurance companies are trying to solve for that. One example of artificial intelligence and humans interacting in really interesting ways happened when there was some terrible flooding, I believe it was in Texas last year, and entire neighborhoods were flooded. And so there's only so many, in order to serve those customers, an appraiser has to go out, survey the damage, and make a decision about how much the insurance company is going to pay you, and authorize things like your night in a hotel, and rental car coverage, or if you're an office, you know, if you're a building, rental of computers, letting you lease some temporary space, all of those kinds of things that we might need. And that takes human involvement. But with the use of drones, they were able to change that. They were able to do it 3 times as fast as they could do before. And in a moment of crisis, that's incredibly valuable. This is the most important thing, the thing that I want you to remember the most. We have to be transparent. If you remember nothing else from our conversation, please remember this. When we go on and we log onto a chatbot, if it's not a real human, please don't make it a human. Don't give it Mary's name and a picture of some stock photography from Mary. This is a great example. This is actually a Drift chatbot. And I like it because it tells me I'm talking to a bot. Talking to a human is overrated sometimes. Sometimes I just want to know, when does our contract expire? Who do you have listed as our primary contact? What is going to be the cost allowed at a price increase so I can budget for next year? Right? All of those things. I don't actually need to talk to a human. But when my website goes down, as a client just had happen 2 days ago, I don't want to talk to Mr. Bot. And if you pretend I'm talking to Mary, and I get partway through this conversation, and it's obviously I'm not talking to Mary, because I'm getting this circular thing back and back and back, we've hurt the trust we had with customers. Fourth, I want to talk to you about data bias. Artificial intelligence systems need to be trained and they need data. That's how they make decisions, that's how they learn. Just like we all have inputs to how we learn. And we need these systems to make those inputs. And there are 3 ways that we give pause to this and we cause problems. The first is something called training bias. When an artificial intelligence algorithm is let out to the world, we need to train it to do something. So it will learn over time, but it has to have a starting place. And this is an example of what happens when there's bias in the data, in this case, gender bias. There are two languages, maybe more, but at least two, Malay and Turkish, that are gender neutral, meaning they have a pronoun for both. They don't have a he and she. They have a single pronoun for both genders. When I am using Google Translate to translate a sentence, the system going from their language to English has to make a decision, is it he or she? When you say nurse or babysitter, it says she. When you say developer or programmer, it says he. Not because Google is evil, because the data it was trained on had inherent biases in it, because we have for decades projected nurses and babysitters as women and developer and programmers as men. It doesn't matter that it's not a reflection of reality, or it's a flawed reality that we want to change. We'd have confirmation bias. Confirmation bias happens when you give somebody a piece of content and they liked it, so you just give them more of that. Oh, they like that white paper, another white paper, another white paper, another white paper, another white paper. And you never give them anything else. Because they liked something, we gave them more of it, and we never tested other things. So sure, they may like that, but what else might they be missing out on? This can happen. There's an experiment done here. This is a study, and they had 500 existing profiles of men and women, and they tested ad serving against those, and those ads for equally qualified people were served more to men than women. Again, DoubleClick was not evil who was serving these ads. It was based on confirmation bias of what was happening. Then there's application bias. There's a pothole application, I think it was in Boston. It says, I want you to report your potholes, download this mobile application, you report road erosion. And if you live in New England in the bad weather, there's a lot of that going on. They found something that didn't make sense though. All of the most reports were coming from the best neighborhood that had the best roads. Couldn't figure out what it was. It's application bias. People who could afford a smartphone at the time, things have changed a little bit, but there was a big income disparity of smartphones a few years ago. The people who could afford the smartphone to download the app were doing the reporting. People who couldn't, didn't. It wasn't a reflection of the roads being bad in those areas. Through all of this, you can solve for this. We don't have to, you know, put up our hands and say, too bad, that's the way it is. We can use multiple data sources. We can create training sets that reflect what we want it to be, not necessarily what it is today. And we have an opportunity as marketers and a business strategy standpoint to drive that. The last thing is we have to integrate human and machine intelligence. There are times to use humans, there are time to use machines, and we have to plan for that. I'll give you a good example of something that I think is incredibly powerful. There's an application called Nexmo. It is for call center staff. It does not take the human off the phone. It is not a machine talking to a human. It is actually a system that alerts the human to when subtle things are happening in the conversation. It listens for pauses, change in pacing, word choices, and it tells the call center person, ooh, slow down, you're going too fast. Ooh, change, why don't you show them this offer? And it reflects on things that Luigi, I told you about at the beginning, was super gifted at and picked up, but the average call center person probably wouldn't. And so it's the perfect example of machines elevating human interaction, not replacing it. So I'll leave you with this final thought. Artificial intelligence is here. We are using it and we should. It's incredible. But we have a deep and important responsibility to use it wisely and transparently and effectively to make sure that we get out of this trust crisis and we can have the types of interactions that make sense in the right context in the right time. I thank you for joining me today. I think we might have a minute or two for a couple questions or comments. Anybody have anything they wanna? I know it's like day three of the conference. So I know you will have questions because it always happens afterwards. And this is a lot to be thinking about and big ideas. So this is my contact information. Please use it. Find me, call me, ask me questions. Tell me what you're doing with it. I'm really intrigued. I'm always looking for new examples of where we're doing really well and where we're struggling. So please reach out. Thanks for joining me today.